I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk politics. Next Tuesday is primary day here in Indiana. We'll discuss the races of interest around the state and country and break down what makes them the ones to watch. I'll be joined by three veteran political reporters: Leslie Weidenbender, executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, Nikki Kelly, State House Bureau Chief of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and Politico trade reporter Eric Bradner. Please join the conversation. Please call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, Twitter is WFYI, Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the primaries that are coming up in about a week today on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimits@wfyi, and Twitter is WFYI. Well, I am joined today by a panel of veteran political reporters, starting with my colleague Leslie Weidenbender, who is the executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com and also has been the guest host of this program in the past. Leslie.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. We're also joined in the studio by Nikki Kelly, who is the State House Bureau Chief for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. Welcome to the program, Nikki.
Great to be here.
And joining us by phone is Eric Bradner, who is with Politico and also has been a guest host on this program. Eric, thanks for joining us.
Hey, everybody. Thanks.
It's good to have you here as well. And I probably ought to do a disclosure. You probably have figured this out, but Leslie and Eric and I have worked together over the years, so there are ties there. I want to start first by asking, what races are there out there that people should be paying attention to that might be interesting? Nikki, I'm going to start with you.
Well, in Northeast Indiana, we have two significant races going on. One is Senate District 15, where longtime Senator Tom Weiss chose not to seek reelection. It's a four-person race, and frankly, all four of them are well-experienced and good candidates. They cover a variety of skills and government experience, from county council to sheriff to city council. So that one's been a pretty interesting one up in our area. And then one a little bit outside is House District 22, where Representative Kubaki, who's seeking a third term, she's facing quite a challenge from he says he's not a card-carrying member of the Tea Party, but he, identifies with the Tea Party, Curt Nisley. And it's gotten pretty heated up there. The Chamber of Commerce has gotten involved in recent weeks, sending out a pretty interesting mailer on Kubaki's part, accusing her opponent of treason. And I noticed just last week she didn't have very much cash on hand, so she did a $10,000 loan from herself to her own campaign. So that one's pretty tight, and it's really focusing on her gay marriage vote and her vote, or not just vote, but her intense involvement in daycare regulation for some church-run daycares.
Leslie, what races do you think we should be paying attention to?
Well, I think the one that I have my eye on the most is also a Senate district race. It's down in Southwest Indiana, and it features incumbent Senator John Waterman, who's running against Eric Bassler, who is from Davies County and is a local official. It's a really interesting race. John Waterman has been in the Senate for a long time now, and he is, but his district got redrawn, so it goes into Davies County now, where it had not before, and so that opens it up to some new areas and, of course, new potential opponents. And so that race is really heating up. There has been some mailers and things in that race as well. The Senate Republican caucus is standing behind John Waterman in that race, but it's another tough one.
And, Eric, which races are you watching?
a couple of races that might not end up being that close. The 2nd Congressional District Democratic primary, where Joe Bach is expected to be the candidate in what, frankly, is the only House district in Indiana that stands a bunch of a chance of being close. But he's got some Democratic opponents. And there's also the Republican race for state treasurer, Wayne Siebold, the Marion mayor, and Don Bates, a former U.S. Senate candidate, are a couple of the candidates trying to win that nomination.
And I think we should point out to listeners, as Eric talks about that race, that nomination will actually be determined at the Republican state conventions. Both the Republican and Democratic state conventions are coming up, and they actually use those conventions to choose their nominees for statewide offices, including treasurer, auditor. Are those the two, Nikki, on the ballot this year?
Mm-hmm.
Treasurer and auditor. And so those races will be on the ballot in the fall, but they make for, as Eric mentioned, could make for an interesting convention fight this year.
And I think there's a third candidate for treasurer. Is there not? She currently works in the office. I'm blanking on her name.
There is. Kelly Mitchell.
There we go. Okay,
yeah.
I just wanted to be fair.
Well,
right.
But it sounds like, in comparison with years past, I mean, 2 years ago, for example, we had one of the most closely watched primary races in the country with the Richard Murdoch, Richard Lugar battle. And there was some thought that the HJR3, the battle over same-sex marriage in Indiana, was going to produce a lot of primary challenges, whichever way it went. What happened there? I mean, it does seem to be a lot quieter than anyone would have predicted 6 or 7 months ago. Nikki?
I don't know if it produced a lot, but at least in my area, like I said, Representative Kubaki, that vote, she's having to deal with that vote every day in her race. And similarly, Representative Kathy Hewer in House District 83, they have virtually the same, I mean, it's not the same opponent, but when you talk to each of the opponents, they list the same votes from each of the women. And hers also was she voted against HR3. So at least in those two races, they're having to deal pretty heavily with that.
But is it as widespread as we thought it might be, Leslie?
No, I think what has happened is that, as we have noted throughout this entire debate about same-sex marriage, a public opinion is changing. Even in the Republican Party, polls show that particularly among middle-aged and younger voters, people are not as concerned about same-sex marriage as they once were, and it's not necessarily a reason why people would vote. And I think that's you're seeing that now in these races, that it has not become a huge issue. Now, the area of Indiana that Nikki covers is a particularly conservative, and I would argue probably a fairly Christian conservative part of the state. So I don't think it's a surprise that if those kinds of issues were going to pop up, they would be in Northeast Indiana and then maybe in Southern Indiana as well, but in Northeast Indiana in particular.
Eric, is it this quiet in other parts of the country, or
no.
Is there actually some squabbling going on?
Yeah, right. No, there are definitely some big races in other parts of the country, but this is like the year that Indiana went to sleep, right? HJR3 was supposed to be sort of the big driving factor in this year's elections, and it's a little bit surprising to me that even after that battle was essentially delayed until next year, there's not more of an effort to sort of frame the state house and senate races as a referendum on the people who actually voted for that same-sex marriage ban. I thought there would be more energy and money devoted to trying to defeat the Republicans who voted for it, but that doesn't seem to be materializing very much. In the rest of the country, I mean, there are some big races. You've got Thad Cochran in Mississippi, a longtime Republican senator, who sits at the top of the Agriculture Committee, at least on the Republican side, facing a race that looks a little bit like what Richard Lugar had in Indiana a couple of years ago. Kentucky's Senate race, just south of the Ohio River, is certainly probably the most consequential in the country. So there are some really, really hot elections elsewhere. It just doesn't seem to be shaping up in Indiana, and that's in part because there haven't been any major, you know, recruiting victories in the 2nd Congressional District and the 8th Congressional District. You've got people like Brad Ellsworth and Jonathan Weinzapfel in Evansville who aren't running, and therefore are sort of passing on a chance to make that a competitive race.
I think, John, if I can, I think it's also worth noting this is the first time since 2002 that Indiana has not had a statewide race on the primary ballot. So as we talked about, some of these statewide offices like treasurer and auditor are going to be on the fall election ballot. But this year there is no U.S. Senate race in Indiana. The governor's race is 2 years away. The presidential race is 2 years away. Because the Senate terms are 6 years, this kind of off-year, political reporter Jim Shella from Wish TV keeps calling it the off-year election, because obviously non-presidential years are off-year elections, but this is one of Indiana's least consequential years on the ballot in terms of big races. So we don't have no governor, no president, no U.S. Senate race. And when you don't have these big races that can raise a lot of money and produce a lot of television ads, then this is what you get. You get a relatively quiet election, and that's what we have so far.
One of the things, and I should invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. We've alluded to the fact that, and particularly up where Nikki is from, Northeast Indiana, that there are, if not officially, I think you used the term card-carrying Tea Party candidates, and I thought, well, that's sort of an anomaly, but that the idea that they might carry cards. But in the past two election cycles, the Tea Party has produced an awful lot of the energy and the drive. Is the Tea Party still the force that it was 2 to 4 years ago? Eric, I'll start with you.
I don't think so. I mean, you know, there was a period of time where you sort of got the feeling that it was a more rabid force. Frankly, there's not a lot for you know, Tea Party members to be mad about in Indiana when you're talking about statewide races. I mean, you know, Nikki laid out a couple of good examples of cases where, the Tea Party, the hard conservative right, is targeting, House members over their vote on same-sex marriage. But I don't. I think this is probably the last election where voting against same-sex marriage will ever hurt a candidate. Where the idea of voting in any way for same-sex marriage will ever hurt a candidate. But no, I mean, I think you're seeing the idea of the Tea Party sort of fade a little bit, but there's definitely sort of a principled right that's still a force. And, the effect will probably just be seen in races that don't get much statewide attention this time.
Yeah, I think that it's important to reiterate something Eric said about Indiana, which is that right now Indiana has a Republican governor, Republican supermajorities in the House and Senate, and a majority Republican congressional delegation. And there are many reasons for that. But one of the reasons that it's likely to stay that way is because the Republican majorities drew the maps that determine races for Congress and the legislature. Therefore, when you really the only place that the Tea Party would be a big factor in Indiana is in the primary, and we're not really seeing that. But I don't think that necessarily means that the Tea Party, and maybe not the Tea Party in the sense that we've seen it the last few elections, but as Eric said, the principled conservative group, I think you're still going to see that across the country in some races where healthcare law, for instance, becomes a big issue. I just don't think that we're in a situation in Indiana to see that here.
We are talking about the upcoming primaries here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by giving us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Again, we're talking about the primaries 1 week from today. My guests are Leslie Weidenbender of thestatehousefile.com, Nikki Kelly, who's the State House Bureau Chief for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and Politico trade reporter Eric Bradner. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about next Tuesday's primary elections here in Indiana and really getting an overview of what the political issues are in this state and to some degree in the country. I'm joined for the conversation by Leslie Weidenbender, who is the executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, Nikki Kelly, who is the State House Bureau Chief for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and Eric Bradner, who is with Politico. Now, we've talked about the fact that this is likely to be a fairly quiet primary, that there are some, you know, there are some races out there where there's a little bit of life and energy, and I suppose the, you know, the traditional nastiness we associate with family feuds, which is what primary elections generally are. But we don't expect a whole lot of people to be engaged in this one, right, Leslie? I mean,
That's right.
Yeah, most off-year elections aren't, and particularly primaries, we don't see a whole lot of people turning out.
Yeah, the last off-year election, we had a voter turnout of 21%. And, you know, that number sounds scary low to me, but it's even scarier when you consider how few people are actually registered. You know, Indiana has 4.2 million registered voters. Only 892,000 showed up to vote. So, That's in 2010, the last off-year election.
And that was with a pretty hot race for the Republican U.S. Senate nomination.
That's right. Yep. And then if you go back to this is interesting to me. If you go back to 2002, which is the last time that we were talking about that there was no Senate race, no governor race, no presidential race, actually the voter turnout that year was 22%. So it was actually slightly higher than 2010. But I got to tell you, I'm predicting that voter turnout will be down in the teens this year. I think it's going to be really, for the primary, I think it's going to be terribly low.
Do you think part of it is that people are, they're less willing to be pinholed to Republican or Democrat? I mean, that's what I hear just chatting with folks who contact me. They, you know, they're less likely to say, I'm Republican, I'm Democrat. They say, you know, I want to vote based on the office and the person, and I wonder if eventually, you know, we're going to have to decide if that's the way we keep going.
Eric, are there numbers nationally that you're aware of that show that, you know, that whole idea of party affiliation is breaking down? If so, there would be some irony in that, given how partisan a lot of the rhetoric is right now.
Right. I don't have numbers offhand, but I can tell you that, I mean, that's sort of the trend that we're seeing here, right? One way to look at it is the fact that you hear both Elizabeth Warren and Rand Paul talking about crony capitalism. So, you know, that tells you a couple of things. On the right, you've got a lot of candidates who are gaining traction nationally who are less about the establishment, less about big business, less devoted to the party as a force. Less willing to sort of go along with the GOP because it's whatever, you know, what's best for their careers. And you see it on the left too, you know, this sort of the distance that a lot of candidates are trying to get from President Obama, for example, during what looks like a tough election cycle for Democrats. So yeah, I think the candidates
I've got a few numbers, Eric. These are actually from 2012. Pew Research they track party affiliation, and they said in 2012 that based on their surveys that year, that independents were growing and had been growing over time and continued to. Their survey showed that 38% of people at that point, this is across the country, of course, not just Indiana, across the country, 38% of people described themselves as independent. And that was up from 32% in 2008 and 30% in 2004. I think it's fair to say there's no reason to think that those numbers have changed much as we go into 2014.
So, in a relatively short period of time, if my math is correct, that's grown more than 25%. I mean, you start at 30 and you move up to 38. And I want to, before we sort of move on, and I want to talk, we have been talking about the Tea Party and really the tensions. I mean, one of the big stories that came out of the legislative session was obviously Mike Delf's response to HJR3. And, you know, part of that was Mickey Maurer, who is the publisher of the Indianapolis Business Journal, was a member of the Daniels administration, wrote two pretty scathing pieces, specifically about Delf, but really about the folks who were pushing HJR3. You know, how intense is that struggle over who's driving the Republican Party right now? I mean, Maurer said that he was going to try to find people to run against Delf in the primary.
Well, it's worth noting that Delf actually does not have a primary opponent. He should feel pretty lucky, I think, in a lot of ways that he ended up without a primary opponent. I think that you saw with this HJR3, which is the marriage debate this year, that businesses and other organizations were willing to pull together to try to move the Republican Party into another direction. And I think that they were successful this year, incredibly successful, I think more so than a lot of people really thought they would be. So I would assume that we're going to continue to see that to some degree, at least here in Indiana, our business types and others pulling the Republican Party away from social issues. It will be interesting to see how they do that when you have a Republican governor like Mike Pence, who is known for being a conservative on social issues. Although, to be fair to Governor Pence, he has not pushed that as an agenda, pushed that type of agenda as governor.
We are talking about next Tuesday's primary here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Nikki, how much, obviously, a lot of what was going on with the primary 2 years ago, the Murdoch-Lugar thing, was national issues. I mean, we were focused on to some degree on Lugar's votes on guns and all of that, but there also was just this sense that he had become a little too cozy with the Obama administration. Is this year's election likely to be national in that sense, at least up from where you are? And then I'd invite others. Is the focus going to be on national issues in the way that we have seen it in the past?
I don't think so. At least in the races I'm covering, they're local issues. I mean, that's the saying, right? All politics are local. I do find it interesting in the Waterman race that we mentioned a little earlier. He's what most people would consider to be a very reliable Republican. He's very conservative. He's, gun rights, pro-life. But yet he's got a pretty hard opponent. And just this morning, Americans for Prosperity, the Indiana branch, they are going on an all-out TV ad, radio, mailer campaign against Senator Waterman, and the reasons they give are that he voted against right to work and he has voted against vouchers. So I thought that's an interesting sort of Republican primary race that is looking at not the conservative issues. It just seems like sometimes, if you're not 100% on board with every single vote,
that is, I agree, Nikki. That is,
they'll go
that's
after
really
you.
Interesting. John Waterman is represents an area of the state that is incredibly conservative in most social ways. but it is also a big union area. You know, a lot of jobs there are related to power plants and construction and all kinds of trades, and the unions are huge there. And so it's not a surprise at all that if John Waterman is going to do a good job representing his area, that he is going to be voting against things like right to work. You know, Eric Bassler, who is a really good candidate, but one of his criticisms of John Waterman has been that the senator has never served in any leadership or as committee chair. Senator Waterman's response to that is that he never wanted to do that, because that when you serve in those leadership positions, it sort of requires you to vote with the caucus in certain times, and that is not something that he wanted to do. So, I mean, that is a very interesting dynamic, and you're right. That is kind of a microcosm of what's going on, the battles that go on within a party.
How much of this is a product of the fact that, as Leslie said, and I think everybody's alluded to, you know, right now pretty much the Republican Party is the only show in Indiana. I mean, they control the governor's office. They control both chambers of the legislature to such a degree that, you know, the Democrats might as well not even show up. Does that mean, in effect, that you know, a lot of these differences that otherwise, if there were a serious threat out there, might pull the party together, actually threaten to, you know, to exacerbate those differences? Eric, I'll start with you.
I think so. In Indiana, right now, the split, frankly, isn't between Democrats and Republicans, because, as you pointed out, Democrats don't matter. It's between the sort of a tired analogy.
We've just made every Democrat in the state of Indiana happy here. But
yeah, well, it's between the Mitch Daniels Republicans and the Mike Pence Republicans. And, you know, you asked about nationalized issues. I think Common Core is a good example of a fight that really is national. I mean, it's something that has Tea Partiers and hardcore conservatives exercised across the country. That is, being turned into a local one. You can sort of see that, you know, by watching Mike Pence's rhetoric. I mean, you know, he has these statements that play well nationally, but mean essentially nothing in an Indiana context. But yeah, I mean, I think the split is between the Daniels era people who are just frankly energized by a lot of different issues than the people who are more enthusiastic about Pence are.
And obviously, as part of this, there's also been an awful lot of speculation about, you know, the governor's future as well. Nikki, you're shaking your head up and down here. He has been making some moves that at least lend themselves to several different interpretations. You talk a little bit about
that. I think he's keeping his options open. His chief of staff recently left and set up a consulting firm to handle his, quote, campaign. And he's
without defining which campaign that was. Yeah.
He spoke Friday at the NRA convention alongside the likes of Marco Rubio and Rick Santorum and others. And I think he was also on Fox News Sunday. So he's really into getting sort of Indiana's story out there. And he's clearly defined, if he would run, he wants to define as the governor who's cutting taxes every year and things like that. So I think he's definitely keeping his options open.
I just have to say that I agree. I think he is keeping his options open. But, and I haven't talked to Governor Pence about this at any length. I just think, though, that he likes having his options open more than he is actually running for president. I mean, if you're going to be running for president in 2 years, you need to have an operation in place in Iowa soon. If you don't already, you need to have it soon. And I don't see Mike Pence doing those kinds of things. I think if Mike Pence is doing anything, it's setting himself up to possibly be a vice presidential hopeful, something like that, more so than actually running for president. But, I mean, that's just my sense of things at the moment.
He could just be using the rumors to get more attention on Indiana.
Yeah, or thinking about even positioning himself for 4 years from then.
I think Leslie's exactly right. I mean, he doesn't have much of a national infrastructure, and the vice presidential nomination, I think, would probably be a good fit for his personality, although Indiana isn't really a state that Republicans are going to see as essential. Michigan might be better positioned if you're going to go with a Midwestern Republican governor. If you look at Pence's time in office, it feels a lot like he's checking all the boxes. He's pushed a lot of tax cuts, of different measures that don't have much direct impact on Indiana or haven't even been implemented yet. And even when they are, it's doubtful that people will feel much of any effect. And yet, they would make a good case when you're, sort of pitching that record as governor in Iowa, when you can give just a quick, 30-second version of it.
We are talking about next Tuesday's primaries here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. In terms of, Eric, you'd alluded to the fact that we've got an interesting race just across the Ohio River with Mitch McConnell. And that would be of interest, obviously, to folks down in southern Indiana. Mm-hmm. What is the latest on that one?
Well, I mean, you've got a primary candidate named Matt Bevin, who's a self-funder, trying to take on Mitch McConnell, and he doesn't seem to have gained that much steam at this point. He hasn't really gotten the kind of traction that Tea Party-type primary challengers seemed to have over the last couple of cycles. You've got a Democratic candidate, Allison Lundergan Grimes, who is going to be pretty well funded and will give McConnell a good race in the fall, but it's pretty hard to see McConnell as anything other than a formidable favorite at this point. He's not exactly loved in Kentucky. his approval ratings, for a Republican senator who's extremely influential are quite low.
Just above the common cold.
Right. But he's going to have a ton of money, and he's shown in the past that he will not hesitate to use that money to drag his opponents even lower.
And in a race like that, I mean, if the primary, I mean, one of the things that always concerns party professionals when you have a hotly contested primary like that, and we saw an example of that where Richard Murdoch knocked off Richard Lugar, and then that sort of softened up the Republican nominee so that the Democrats could claim the seat 2 years ago. Is there a concern that if that thing gets too ugly, a Democrat actually could win in Kentucky, or is that...
Sure, absolutely, because... the Democrats already do have a good candidate. It's sort of like Joe Donnelly a couple of years ago. He was, not likely to beat Richard Lugar, but at the same time was well positioned as sort of a middle of the road candidate, just in case of an upset. You know, I think Republicans are starting to realize that. If you look nationwide, there's this Mississippi primary with Thad Cochran and a state senator named Chris McDaniel, and that's going to be a good test of the Tea Party's influence. But there are some other states like South Carolina and Kansas where the Tea Party has sought to line up a primary for an incumbent Republican senator and has failed to really get much traction at all. They haven't put any sort of dent in the leads of people like Lindsey Graham in South Carolina and Pat Roberts in Kansas. So indications right now are that the lessons of the last couple of years are beginning to be learned, I suppose. Although, there are different dynamics in every race as well. I mean,
Eric, we'll have to hold that for a moment. We are talking about the primaries here on No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about next Tuesday's primary elections and really doing an overview of the political trends and currents in the state and across the country. I'm joined by Leslie Weidenbender, who is the executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, Nikki Kelly, who is the State House Bureau Chief for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, Eric Bradner from Politico, and now on the line with us is Chelsea Schneider from the Evansville Courier and Press. Chelsea, welcome to the program. And I probably should do a disclosure. Chelsea is a former student of mine as well. Chelsea, we want to get an overview. What is happening down in the southwest part of the state in terms of next Tuesday's primary election?
Sure. Well, you know, currently, our 8th district, Congressman, Representative Larry Bouchon is facing a primary challenger. His name is Andrew McNeil. You know, it's the first time he's speaking to run for elected office. And my coworker, at the Evansville Courier and Press, Thomas Langhorne, did a pretty extensive piece, about the race for, our publication last week. And basically, the argument in that primary has become, who is representing the mainstream, Republican base, the best. So we'll see, how that kind of, parlays into, the election. And whoever, does win that faces a Democratic challenger in November.
Obviously, when you have a primary challenger and you've got an elected representative already in place, there's got to be something that some faction of the party thought that representative was not doing to represent them and their interests. What are the folks who want to challenge Bouchon? What are they upset about?
Sure. I guess what their main argument is that, Representative Bouchon is kind of this basic quote-unquote loyal, foot soldier for Republican leadership, in Congress. They're arguing, that same Republican leadership is routinely, the actual word he, McNeil used was, outfoxed and out-negotiated, by President Barack Obama. So he's basically saying if he does win the primary, and ends up, being in office, that he'd represent, the GOP's, conservatism, more effectively than the current office holder. So that's basically, the main argument they're making. But on the other side, Representative Bouchon is basically saying that he's been an effective legislator. He's worked on parties and, worked with his colleagues from, both parties, get legislation passed. And he's basically just arguing back that he does have a solid, conservative voting record.
That's interesting because it sounds like, to some degree, the person who's on the ballot there is almost John Boehner, more than Larry,
sure.
Larry Bouchon. Eric, are we seeing that elsewhere in the country that Republicans, you mentioned earlier that there are Democrats who are distancing themselves from Barack Obama. Are we seeing Republicans in other parts of the country trying to distance themselves from the House leadership?
Yeah, I mean, this is essentially the case when you've got a district, a very conservative district, or a very conservative primary challenger against an incumbent Republican, especially someone who's only been around for 2 years or 4 years at this point, and who has sided with House Republican leadership in some of the fiscal fights that we've seen the last couple of years, especially on things like reopening the government. Some of these Republicans feel that they need to get distance from Boehner. It's sort of like the the Heritage Action type allies who maybe didn't even support Boehner on those votes. Those are positions that they took in many cases to stay safe from primaries, and people like Bouchon are having to make the argument that it's kind of ridiculous to criticize him for voting to reopen the government. That's the spot they knew they were going to be in when they cast those votes, but it's definitely something we're seeing in primaries around the country. Votes on whether to align with the Republican leadership on the fiscal fights of the last couple of years are certainly key issues when incumbent Republicans are challenged from the right.
We are talking about next Tuesday's primary elections here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, Nikki, where would the surprises be on Tuesday? Are there going to be any, or is this going to be really, you could call it today?
Yeah, I'm not expecting any major surprises. We might see one or two incumbent upsets in the House or Senate, the State House or Senate. But other than that, I'm not holding out any hope for any big suspense on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I agree, Nikki. I mean, frankly, anytime an incumbent gets knocked off, it's a little bit of a surprise, even if someone has voted a certain way or done something, or, you know, it's always a little bit of a surprise when an incumbent either doesn't have enough money or can't muster the campaign they need to win. And so, you know, if you saw John Waterman get knocked off, or if you saw Representative Kubaki end up losing, that is a surprise. But at least those are on the radar. I don't think there's necessarily going to be any races that will be a big shock. You know, there are a few races out there we haven't talked about. Senator Jim Smith is facing a primary challenge down in southern Indiana, right along the Ohio River there in Clark County. I think Jim Merritt is facing a Republican challenger here in Indianapolis. I've heard quite a few radio ads. It's funny, we've had...
Yeah, I ran into Senator Merritt at Emmis one day, and he was in recording spots.
So. Yeah, you know, there's the airwaves are just empty, really, of much political advertising at all. But I have heard Senator Merritt some ads for him. So there are a few other races we haven't mentioned. So there could be a surprise
Eric
or two.
Turner,
yeah, we
has...
ought to talk about that because he does have a primary challenge and obviously some other issues he has to deal with right now. Nikki.
Oh, yeah, obviously, Representative Eric Turner, he does have a challenger, and this is coming about at the time where he's facing questions about whether he ethically handled his work on a bill or against a bill that the bill would have been a nursing home moratorium, which would have hurt a business that he is heavily involved in along with his family. He didn't vote on the bill, and he didn't sponsor the bill, but he did speak in caucus on the bill. And so the House Ethics Committee has been considering that, and they plan to vote tomorrow, and I expect nothing but him being cleared. In the meantime, his opponent, from my understanding, you know, hasn't really gone after that. And this isn't the first time that ethical questions have come up involving Representative Turner, but his opponent says he's taking the high road and doesn't want to focus on that. So we'll see how that one turns out.
Well, then let's take this in another direction. And, you know, coming out of the primary, obviously things begin to gear up almost immediately for the fall election, big one. What do we anticipate will be the themes first here in Indiana in the fall election following this primary, and then, you know, nationally as well? Leslie, I'll start with you.
Well, I think talking about Eric Turner, I expect that there will be a much more aggressive campaign against Eric Turner in the fall. He is facing a Democrat named Bob Ashley, who is
a former State House reporter
and a guy with a very strong personality, a handle on the issues. I don't know that he has a lot of money or what kind of support he has. And the district, I think, is quite Republican. But having said that, you know, there are Democrats in that district. It's not unheard of. It would not be unheard of for Eric Turner to be in some trouble in that race. And given everything that has come up, you know, it's interesting. Bob Ashley actually got into this race because he was so frustrated that Eric Turner was the author of the marriage amendment. And so the rest of this all sort of came later and bolsters some chance that he might have. So that is an interesting race to look for fall. And then I think what you're going to see is Democrats trying desperately to pick up just a few seats. I think it's fair to say that Democrats in Indiana have no shot at gaining a majority in either the House and certainly not the Senate. But even if they could pick up just a few seats, get back to the point where they are where they can
deny a quorum.
Where they can deny the Republicans a quorum. I mean, that that in and of itself is kind of a big deal, and it would be an enormous morale boost for Democrats. So I see them putting all of their energy in gaining just a few seats.
Yeah, I think the Eric Turner thing is going to be a lot of fun because Turner is probably going to be cleared by the House Ethics Committee, but not because he didn't do anything wrong, because the House's rules are a joke. I mean, it's not like there's not going to be a ton of ammunition there to use against him. So, and it seems like that's a story that's not going to go away in the press either, with a couple of pretty good investigative reporters who seem to be, really stuck on it at this point. So it kind of strikes me as strange that House Democrats don't want to pick up on this, but individual candidates certainly might.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Ernest who says, your guests have repeatedly made references to how legislators voted on HJR 3 might influence the elections, but they never say which side of that issue the cited legislators were on. Why the secrecy? I don't think it was secret.
Representative Huer and Representative Kubaki, they both voted to first take out the second sentence, which then delayed it to 2016, and then they voted against the ban in the House. So that is how they voted.
And Representative Eric Turner is actually the author of the marriage amendment. He opposed taking out the second sentence. He is for the ban completely.
And I'm thinking of the other, Mike Delf was the senator we made reference to who had a press conference, supported HJR 3 and wanted the second sentence and reinstated, worked to try to get it reinstated on the Senate side.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say none of us were trying to be secretive at all about which side they voted on. Is just an oversight on our part.
Yeah, some of it is that when you live in this world, you assume that everybody knows these things. So our apologies for not making that clear. Eric, I want to ask you the same question, and Chelsea as well. What themes do you expect to see? And I'm going to start actually with Chelsea. What themes do you expect to see being set up for the fall election coming out of the primary?
Sure. Well, it'll be really interesting. You know, in southwestern Indiana, we don't have a lot of competitive races currently, you know, out of the state house in our primary elections. One of the big ones we're looking ahead to, you know, is what's going to be happening, you know, with a race between Holly Sullivan and her Democratic challenger, who's a Vandenberg County commissioner, you know, in the fall. And I think that will be one of the seats, you know, that could go either way in terms of, you know, maybe Republicans losing, you know, their supermajority hold, you know, on, you know, the Indiana House. So I think that will be an interesting dynamic to see, you know, can, you know, like Leslie is saying, can Democrats, you know, squeeze out, you know, the seats they need, you know, to have more of, you know, a say in how the debate, you know, goes. I even think that, you know, the issue of, you know, same-sex marriage isn't going to go away either when it comes to the November elections because, you know, as our Republican leadership has said, you know, they want to see it come back in the future. They want it to be debated again. They want Indiana's process to run separately and independent from anything that's happening, you know, in the U.S. Supreme Court or our federal courts down here. So I think that will be an interesting, you know, trend to see what happens and how that shapes, you know, conversation, you know, in the fall, considering it is a midterm election.
Eric, what themes do you see?
Well, I couldn't hear Chelsea, so I hope I don't repeat too much. But in congressional races, I expect Republicans to stay on the anti-Obama horse and Democrats to pound the idea that congressional Republicans can't be trusted to keep the government open. Statewide, I think it's important that you didn't see any Democratic support for the anti-gay marriage amendment this year, and I think that was by design. I would be surprised if Democrats didn't eventually start to make that a bigger campaign theme, especially because that's by far the highest profile political issue that Indiana's going to deal with this decade.
I would say in general, I expect Republicans to say, look, let's continue the progress we've done over the last 8 years. And I expect Democrats to say, what have we done for the average Hoosier? I mean, their per capita income continues to go down and we're giving business breaks. So I kind of see that as the layout.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Republicans teed up some issues, as Nikki said, for Democrats this year. You know, when you give a big tax break like they did this year to business, they give an income tax, corporate income tax break to businesses, and then they took some steps to allow locals to cut the business personal property tax. And it's not going to be a surprise if Democrats are out there reminding voters that they did not take any steps that were that dramatic for individuals. You heard House Minority Leader Scott Pelath talk repeatedly about the need to do more for the average worker during the session. And I think that was just a preview of things to come for fall.
I think education reform can always morph, too. I mean, there was a point in time when you wouldn't have thought the Common Core would be controversial for any Republican to support. And these education reforms still aren't very old, so it's entirely possible that something new becomes controversial between now and November.
What prompted the about-face on Common Core? Leslie, I'll throw that one to you.
Well, you know, Common Core started out as a fairly under-the-radar issue. You know, standards, people don't pay a lot of attention usually to education standards as they're being developed. And when you really start to think about it and when parents start to pay attention is when curricular materials start to come out, when textbooks start to come out based on the standards, and when other worksheets and workbooks and all of those kinds of things start to come out. And so what happened with Common Core is many states adopted it. Nobody paid a lot of attention. And then the materials started coming out. Teachers started raising some questions about some of those materials. And then the Obama administration endorsed Common Core as something that it supported, even though it really had nothing to do at all with the creation of Common Core. But, you know, when you get those things, a combination of those things going, you're going to find that conservatives in places like Indiana don't like the feeling that someone else is telling them what their kids should learn. There are, you know, honestly, I don't really understand some of this stuff that well, because, you know, when you look at the way math is being taught, I honestly can't remember that much about the way I learned math. I'm not sure I learned it that well. But there are some questions about the way math, about the changes in the way math is being taught, and some things about literature. And so, you know, that's just got a big group of people going.
And that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests and thank our listeners. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producer, Cedric Freeman, and board engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.